Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast, where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and it's opening night in Old Bavaria. We can do it with that face, but since I want to be a producer, I'll round up the prisoners of love. Along came Bialy in the springtime for Hitler, but where did we go right till him? Well, as I always say, Hoppen Sie gesund, das Deutsche Band. And remember...
Are you though? Do you?
Yeah. I wake up, I look in the mirror, and that's my pep talk in the morning. And remember, don't be betrayed because you never say good luck on opening night. Goodbye. Joining us today are the usual Der Guten Tag Hopklops, who keep it gay, including Kevin, when you got it, flaunt it, Jaeger.
Yes!
Kimberly. Kimberly, our King of Broadway game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Oh, a king.
And with us today is two-time Tony-nominated actor who you may have seen in such shows as, and keep in mind, these are just highlights, Aspects of Love, Jekyll and Hyde, The Producers, Spamalot, The Addams Family, Nice Work If You Can Get It, Big Fish, Something Rotten, and the current, upcoming, however you want to define it, Mrs. Doubtfire. Let's give a big broad-waisted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Brad Oscar.
Y'all ready for this?
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Nice to join you. Cheers.
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 Well, with that cheers, what are you drinking?
What are you drinking?
Well, I bumped down the wine.
I bumped down.
Well, you know. Right, what's the old adage? You know, beer then liquor then beer, right? Yeah. You know, so yep. Yeah, so I had a vodka earlier before dinner, a sensible vodka, and so now I wouldn't necessarily even be drinking right now. He said in his best actorly voice after dinner, but you know, but I'm with you guys, so you know, so I was like, oh, I'll have a glass
of wine.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you, Kevin. You're drinking wine too, right?
It's Prosecco. And it's still...
Oh. Sparkle. Sparkle, Kevin, sparkle.
It's like sparkly and $7, so it's like buying the croc.
Not as bad as being needy.
Yeah. Kimberly?
I have a gin and tonic in one of my grandfather's old golf tumblers.
Ooh.
With our favorite Bar Hill gin.
Oh, I love Bar Hill.
Yes.
Wonderful. And I haven't had a sip of bourbon in a while. I've been mostly wine and tequila and spiked seltzer. But today I went with some Bullet bourbon on the rocks. That's what I was feeling tonight.
How's it feel?
Feels great, Kimberly. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
Diary.
Yeah.
May, whatever the hell it is, 2020. Yeah.
Today was different.
Week 9. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. You know, these are crazy circumstances, so thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. Let's just start out with an easy question. What's your favorite musical?
An easy question. That's just it. That's one of those questions that, you know, honestly, I can be honest here, that I hate, because right, having to pick, you know, a favorite of anything like that, you know.
Totally unfair.
My first answer probably always would end up being Sweeney, I guess. Sweeney Todd. Sure. Yeah. Just because, yeah. And, you know, again, I think that I love musical theater. I've loved it since I was a kid. My parents turned me on to it. I saw shows. So it's in my blood. And so I think we all have emotional connections to certain shows as we were coming of age, if we loved it, right?
Yeah.
There are touchstones. Everyone has a favorite show. I have a nephew of sorts, in quotes, one of my dearest friend's son, who his favorite show is Jekyll and Hyde. But he loved, because that meant so much to him. And of course, I was doing it at the time, and he saw it and came backstage and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But anyway, we all have shows that are, and Sweeney, you know, I mean, mind you, I was like, what, 15 or 16, I think, when it opened on Broadway. But yeah, you know, we all know, we don't need to talk about Sweeney. But, you know, yeah, having had the opportunity to do it a couple of years ago was amazing because I'd never done it and I always wanted to do it and I always wanted to play Sweeney. Having done it now, played the Beatle, I feel like I've gotten it out of my system because it's a to do Sweeney, you know, eight times a week is absurd.
And boy, oh boy, so, were you a part of a magical production of Sweeney.
I still can't, you know, you look back on, you know, what you've gotten, what I've gotten to do and how blessed I've been and blah, blah, blah. And that really was, yeah, very, very special to be involved with that. And the people I got to work with. And, you know, to for the first time in my life, in my career, to get to, you know, meet and work a little bit with the master himself, Steve, as you must call him, was, you know, and he's so excited by all this, you know, the Renaissance in his work. Mm-hmm. And so he was such an active and excited part of that production when we, you know, when we started into previews and stuff. And, you know, he saw the thing like five times while I was doing it. And then I'm sure, and I only did the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So no, yeah, pressure. That was,
yeah.
No pressure in that space, right? At the pie shop.
Yeah. You know exactly where he is.
You know, and I am so sure there's no way I'm singing the harmony to God That's Good correctly because it was such a, you know, it deviled me so much. And there he is at the table. And I'm like, I'm just going to pray that I'm singing the right thing because I have no idea what's happening right now.
Now, you mentioned about nostalgia in shows. Do you remember your first Broadway show? Or was, in addition to that, was there a show that you're like, oh, I'm going to do this?
Well, my first Broadway show was on the 20th Century.
Oh, wow.
At the St. James Theater, around, mm-hmm. which has become a very special place for me over the years. 1978, yes. So that was the first Broadway show I saw. But I grew up in D.C., so as I said, my parents were taking me to the theater, so I saw a ton of shows try out in D.C.
Oh, sure.
From like, you know, 1974, 5-ish, when I was sort of old enough to start, you know, not only going to see, you know, what legitimate, if you will, theater, you know, but understand, appreciate, and actually remember what I was seeing.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, that was, you know, such an education and seeing other kid actors on stage. I saw Raisin, the musical, which tried out in DC before Broadway. And there is, of course, there's a young boy in the story. And it was Ralph Carter, who later went on to play the younger son in Good Times.
Oh.
Was this role in the original Broadway production. So anyway, I saw this kid of a very similar age to me up there on stage doing this. And I remember having an overwhelming emotional sense of wanting that or just being so, you know, feeling something I'd never quite felt before, whatever that connective tissue was or that desire or that need or whatever it was. I don't know at the time, I certainly couldn't identify it. Now I guess I know what it was, but, you know, and then blessed with parents again, who did some community theater and took me to the theater and, you know, introduced me to start taking classes and stuff like that. So,
yeah. And you talked about obviously the St. James holding a very special place in your heart. If you don't mind, I'd love to talk about producers just a little bit. You originated a part in the show and then you would hop into other parts essentially. When you finally took over, so what was that experience like playing that role but then hopping into other parts, especially when you may or may not be hopping in for a part where other people were expected to be playing that part for that evening?
Right.
I don't know how that worked. And then if you could kind of, I'll let you talk however you want about it, but then that evolved into you being the person on the marquee playing that role. What was it like kind of all of a sudden shifting your mindset to be playing this different character in a show that you'd been so comfortable in playing a different part for so long?
Right. No, my producer story is totally crazy because I literally, when we started rehearsal, I was the last one cast. I was cast like 2 weeks before rehearsal started.
Oh, wow.
I was on a leave of absence from Jekyll and Hyde on Broadway. God bless. 4 years that show ran, provided me with a lot of work, and I really had a great time and have a great Jekyll and Hyde family, so I don't want to diss Jekyll. But anyway, So I'm playing Santa Claus for the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. I think I'm coming back to Jekyll, but then Jekyll's closing. I have no job. My agent calls. They're looking for a standby for Nathan for the role of Max. I fly in. I audition. Literally the next day, I'm offered basically a swing position covering Max and Franz Liebken and Roger Debris and the character men in the ensemble. So all of a sudden, you know, first day of rehearsal, 2 weeks later, they got me out of my contract. It was crazy. So 2 weeks later, I walk in that room and I'm basically responsible for all of those roles, three principal roles and at least four character ensemble, these numbers, this show. It was crazy. So all during rehearsal here in New York and when we get to Chicago pre-Broadway, I'm flipping out. I'm trying to learn. I've never, ever been. I was a swing on Aspects of Love, and that was a whole different story. This was a real, you know, I would have been a lousy swing on the producers, but as fate would have it, before we start performances in Chicago, the actor playing Franz has to have surgery on his knee in order to get better to open the show in New York. I go in as Franz. I do most of the Chicago run. The show is well received. Everyone's happy with what I'm doing. I'm there in rehearsal during the day as we're making changes. We get back to New York. I am offered the role of Franz Liebkin. They buy the other actor, God bless him, out of his contract. I play Franz Liebkin, and I'm still covering Max and Roger Debris, but no more ensemble stuff. Now I'm a principal. It's crazy. We open. I get a Tony nomination, the whole thing, within a matter of months. I'm it's crazy. So anyway, so then for the first year of the run, I'm playing Franz, mm-hmm. and I'm going on for Max when Nathan can't do it anymore because it's a bear of a role. Sure. And God bless that man. You know, I mean, he's a monster and he's unbelievable, but the human body can only do what it can do. Mm-hmm. So he would go down and then I would get to play Max. And then he left and they replaced him with another actor and that didn't work out so well. So a month after Nathan Lane left, I was back on stage playing Max full time for the first time, about a year and a month into the run, opposite Steven Weber, my dear Steven Weber, and then I played Max on Broadway, opened the Second National, back on Broadway, in London, in Vegas. It's crazy. It is the gift that kept on giving. Stroman is my fairy godmother. We had a fabulous reunion the other night of the Leo Company and the Vegas Company. There's a lot of crossover at both companies. It really, especially at a time like this when we're all... You know, we reflect now. We have what we have. We have our life. You know, we all want our lives to come back, whatever that means to us, you know. And obviously performing is such a part of my life. So I miss it very much, especially Doubtfire being, you know, snatched from us at the most exciting moment of the process in many ways. So, yes, for me to reflect back on that experience of being a part of that show and playing those roles, inheriting that role, learning from the masters, from zero, and then of course through as interpreted through Nathan in that performance, and then finally making it my own months after I took over. I remember feeling like maybe now it's, I don't hear Nathan's voice every night, because mm-hmm. you know, you hear the show every night, you hear it through the monitor backstage, even when you're not on stage, you hear the show, it becomes a soundtrack. You hear the minute somebody goes up on a lyric, everybody goes, they're doing a thousand things, and somebody and everyone in the dressing room goes like that because it is a soundtrack. And so because the kind of comedy that the producers is, and you need to just hold up a T sign if I'm just rambling.
No, this is great. Yeah.
The kind of that is, it's a rhythm. It's like a song, yeah. Right? It's music. There's a beat, there's a rhythm to that dialogue. So my point being, mm-hmm. it became, yes, I would hear, of course, you know, the sound. I would try to just, you know, channel, interpret it, say again, speak to the other guy, talk to the guy, you know, be an actor, do all the things you want to do to ideally just fill the part with you. And you know, needless to say, I was there in the first place because I was Nathan enough that it would work in some way. You know what I mean? As an understudy, you're, especially for that role in that position, they wanted someone, you know, who would echo that in a way. I'm not blind to that, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. And believe me, people think they're complimenting you at the stage door after a performance when they say, oh, you were just like Nathan Lane, you know. And I'm not talking about even the producers. I'm talking about shows I've done since. And
oh, they're sure.
Like, oh, just like what Nathan would. You know. Yeah, I mean, and people think they're complimenting you because mm-hmm. Nathan is, of course, you know, of course, wonderful. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway, blah, blah, blah. We all have our cross to bear. Please, you know, please, yeah. Louise, poor me. So, yeah. But yeah.
A memoir title, Nathan Enough.
Yeah.
not to get cheesy, but my very first Broadway show, because I'm from Florida, and my senior class trip was to New York City, and our first show was The Producers. Uh-huh. And we were playing Max. You had taken over.
Really?
So this is really cool for me to talk to you because, like, that, like, you were the first lead role in a show that I saw on Broadway when I was like, yes, I'm moving to New York and I'm going to be part of whatever this is.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, you know, I told you my first Broadway show was 20th Century. I saw 20th Century weeks after Madeline Kahn left the original company, literally 2 months after it opened. I think she left or was fired or whatever the history go. You know, there are many reasons or versions of how what happened. But anyway, sure. Judy Kay, who was playing the role of her maid and understudying, took over. And suddenly it was, you know, John Cullum and Judy Kay and Imogen Coke or whatever. And I saw Judy Kay. Now, Judy Kay was not a star. She was not a name at that point. She became that sort of boom, catapulted her and blah, blah, blah. She does other stuff. But, you know, the idea that Judy Kay was, for me, a goddess. And when she came through town in D.C. a couple years later with a failed musical called Oh Brother, which actually has a great score and was really fun, there was Judy Kay. And I was like, oh my God, you know, that connective tissue that we have. And then to get to work with her eventually in Nice Work and a couple of the shows.
Sure.
It's been just crazy.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Let's play a game.
Let's do it.
Oh dear.
Okay.
Oh dear. Okay.
Speaking of fun people.
Well, I love that we're both using like stemless glassware.
Yeah.
All about
I don't like stemmed wine glasses are so dangerous. There's enough danger in the world right now. I don't need a stem. No, please.
Your life can be the better. Yeah. Kevin, did you get something in the mail recently?
Yes, I'll go get it.
Yay!
Oh, wow.
as Kevin gets them, I'll explain the game. So Kevin has gotten us some new Lights of Broadway show cards.
Yeah, we're so thankful for our friends at Lights of Broadway show cards for sending us cards since our cards are in quarantine at
our studio.
Yes.
So we
next to the gin.
I love those cards. I love those cards.
We're obsessed with these cards. We play so many games with them. And so the Lights of Broadway show card people, we love you, Dory. We love you, Twigs. They were able to send us a bunch of cards to my house.
Luckily, have my mother's mug full of cards.
All
right. I'm not entirely sure why this is where she keeps them, but they're in a mug next to the couch. And so I've brought them up here. So on our very first episode ever, we played a game with fresh packs, like Kevin has right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where you open a new pack and then taboo style, try and get us to guess who is in that pack. So,
taboo, like the musical Taboo? Mm-hmm. Like you have to sing from Taboo the musical?
It's a very niche game.
It's a very niche game.
Very niche. Like, but a really good
game. Anything but the actor's name.
Okay.
To make it a little more fun and competitive, Kevin will have a minute to get us to guess as many as he can. And then I will then have a minute to try and get you to guess as many as I have. And so
can I open a couple packs now?
Yes.
Okay. So just so you know, we got.
Tell me what editions they are as you open them.
Yes, because we got they sent like a crazy assortment. So I'm going to open three packs.
Wow.
Okay. I'm going to open a pack that's the autumn 2018 edition.
Sure.
We have the 2019 edition.
Lovely.
And then a mega mix, because I know Brian loves a mega mix.
I love every musical should have a mega mix. I don't care.
Can you imagine the Jekyll and Hyde mega mix?
Oh God.
Yes, please. I can.
There are two sides to that argument.
I'm pretty sure if there was a mega mix of Jekyll and Hyde, Linda Eder would just fall over dead. Like she literally can't sing 18, 11 o'clock numbers in like a mega mix.
Oh God, exactly. Oh God.
I worship her though. She's
I adore her.
She's so amazing. Good.
So gifted.
All right.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, you got some open?
I'm ready.
All right.
Okay. All right, Kevin, the minute on the clock starts now.
Okay. He is an actor that's in a lot of shows. He was Will's boyfriend on Will and Grace for a few seasons.
Bobby Cannavale.
Yes. She was on Broadwasted. She was in the musical Les Mis. She was the first replacement. Then she was in My Fair Lady on Broadway. And then she did Sunday in the Park with George. She was in Amour. She likes
Carolee Carpenter. No.
Melissa Errico?
Yes.
Oh, good one, yeah.
She played the love interest in Be More Chill.
Oh, Stephanie?
Stephanie's shoe.
Yes.
Yeah.
She was one of the three plastics in Mean Girls. Yes. He was on that TV show Breaking Bad.
Ryan Cranston.
Yes.
Oh.
This is a very old school musical by Hammerstein and Jerome Kern.
Showboat?
Showboat.
Yes. She was on Will and Grace. She was like the crazy drunk one, Karen.
Megan Mullally.
Yes.
And that's your time.
Oh.
Good job. How many did you get?
I got.
Well done.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
All right.
Well done. Thank you, guys.
Okay. My try.
Okay, let's do this. And a minute for Kimberly.
Gypsy. The original.
Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman. Oh.
I was like, Ty Daly.
Yeah.
He was in, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, and he played a million people.
Rice Pinkham.
No.
Jefferson Mays.
Yes.
Such a good name.
I know. It is a musical about a man who's green.
Shrek.
Yes.
Oh, the Incredible Hulk?
It is a song cycle.
Songs for a New World.
No. By, oh, it was most recently at
the Wild Party.
Two.
Edges?
No, it's by, it's a, from 1995. Oh, yeah, from the catalog of Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller.
Smokey Joe.
Yes.
That's Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Oh, 4.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. Wah,
wah.
Okay.
The track one is so fun.
Do you want to try again or are we done?
Yeah, let's play again. Yeah. Let's do one more round.
Okay, Kevin, you go.
Come on, Kev.
Okay, hold on. Let me get this set up.
Sure.
Now I'm like, did I miss the minute for Kevin? Because how'd he get so many?
Well, you spent time taking them out of the cup. I think you should just have a stack in front of you.
I think you're right.
All right,
Kevin. Ready?
Ready, Kev?
Yep.
Go.
Rock and roll.
Okay, he played, he was Roger Debris in the Producers.
Gary Beach.
Yes.
God rest his soul.
She won a Tony for playing Adelaide with Nathan Lane.
Faith Prince.
Yes.
Come on.
This was a play that had Celia Dean Bolger, and it was about Peter Pan.
Oh, it's Peter the Star Catcher.
Yes.
Yes. She was in Dames at Sea as a Broadway replacement.
Eloise?
She played Ava Perone on the Evita Tour.
Rhymes?
She was Grisabella in Cats.
Maybe Paris?
She did Sunset Boulevard at Gateway Playhouse. I think she was on TV.
Can you rhyme her name?
That's your time.
Lonnie Ackerman.
Oh.
Lonnie Ackerman.
Oh, Lonnie Ackerman. Of course, Lonnie Ackerman, who was once Lonnie Zoe Ackerman. And then she took out the Zoe. Oh, Lonnie Ackerman. Yeah, those were right.
She was on TV, right?
Probably. She was in No, No, Nanette, too, that big 1972 No, No, Nanette. She did Evita for a while.
Too. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, Kimberly. My turn.
Yeah, 1 minute on the clock.
They're out of the mug.
There you go. Watch this. We're going to get 20.
Okay. A musical that was a movie with Julie Andrews.
Victoria?
With an umbrella.
Mary Poppins.
A musical about the founding fathers, not with hip hop.
1776.
Correct. A fake musical from the prom.
Eleanor.
Eleanor.
Yeah.
She was Joanne in the Rent movie, and then also in the last cast.
Tracy.
First name's right.
Tracy. Sims? No.
No, Ellis? But similar.
Tracy, and she was in the Falsettos revival.
Yeah, she was.
Think of my nephew's first name.
Tracy Toms.
There you go.
Oh my gosh, that was so painful
for me. The same plastic that Kevin had.
Kate Rockwell.
Ugh.
The end. Wait, how many did you get, Kevin?
A moment of truth. One.
I got five.
I got three.
Ooh.
Lonnie Ackerman.
Lonnie Ackerman.
Derailed you.
God bless her.
That means we tied. That's fun.
Yay!
Exactly. That's the world I want to live in. I'd have two Tonys. I'm kidding. By the way, whenever I'm introduced in that one, you know, especially in a situation like this, because of dear Brooks Ashmanskas, who yelled across the street to me one day as I was walking down 8th Avenue, he was on the other side and he said, "Hey, two-time Tony loser."
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, why shouldn't we be introduced as, and just because you'll get immediate like sympathy or, you know, and now two-time Tony loser, Brad Oscar.
Yeah, oh, that's how we introduced Jeremy Jordan. One time Tony loser.
We call him a Tony loser every time he comes on the show.
Thank
and we
you.
Always make it a point to talk about Steve Kazee.
I appreciate it.
So, you know, as someone who is Tony losing for playing Nostradamus, let's talk about the future a little bit. So obviously Mrs. Doubtfire is on hold until things come back. We had only heard good things from people in the cast, friends of the show and just word of mouth from Seattle and including some of the, you did start previews here, correct?
Yeah, we did three shows.
Yeah. Yes.
Talk a little bit
about what we can expect when it comes back. What's special about it? How it lends itself to a stage adaptation, right. As much as you can talk about.
Right. Because of course, you know, we're all, you know, I know we can all roll our eyes. Oh, another movie becomes a musical. Well, of course, yes. You know, everyone's looking for a source material that an audience is going to respond to. Let's not kid ourselves. It was getting harder than ever. And my gosh, it's going to be even worse, right? You know, getting people to not only come back to the theater, whatever, financially get them to buy tickets. You know, there's a lot going on here. So, but more importantly than all that, as far as why sit down and adapt this story, this is a story, of course, about a guy who wants to be with his kids. He's going through a divorce, and there's separation involved, and his kids are going to be basically, you know, taken away from him, and he wants to be a part of their lives. He goes to these lengths to be in their lives. So it's a, you know, that story, the need, the connection, the idea of what family means, what lengths we go to for our family, what it actually means to be a family as far as all of those who are from broken homes. And, you know, in the world we live in now, when the definition of family is more multifaceted than ever, as well as it should be. So I think it's a story at heart that, again, is universal in a way that we can all can find our way into this story, whether it's from the child's perspective or the father, the mother, the this, the that. I think that the story resonates and has been very smartly adapted because, you know, this is a case where you don't want to screw with the source material. You don't want to, you want to tell the story in the best way possible, but you don't want to betray the spirit and what made the film so special in the first place. Of course, part of that is Robin. Half of that is Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. So we are fortunate in that we have our musical theater, you know, we have our genius, Rob McClure, who is one of the most inventive, creative, kindest. He's just everything. And believe me, the reason the show, I believe, is so and will be, God willing, so successful has so much to do with him. And the great Jerry Zaks, which I could just go on. I've never worked with Jerry before. So that's been an amazing just education and wonderful time for me. So, you know, I'm really proud of what we got. Audiences really responded in Seattle. We've made it better. As I said, they haven't futzed with it. It's you know, it follows the basic through line of how the story is told on screen because it works and we need to... Yes, we need to please the audiences that love the film, but and they will respond to certain lines or certain moments, but it's not about, you know, putting the movie on stage.
Sure.
it just so happens that, yes, we follow that sequence, you know, as do many adaptions of many other source material, blah, blah, blah. It has to stand on its own. So,
and they expanded you're playing the role made popular by Harvey Fierstein. They've expanded that, giving, you know, more material to that side of the story, which is where you come in.
Yes. A little bit. Yes, exactly. A little bit. We have, I mean, as the movie has that sequence where they make him up as all the different women until they land on Iphigenia Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. We have a big number, of course. I mean, there's a perfect moment for, you know, that moment can sing, you know, really it does. And it's a great, terrific number because it culminates with, like, I don't know if I should talk about it or whatever, but again, it culminates with our first seeing mm-hmm. Rob as Daniel, as Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. So it's a very exciting moment. So yes. And they've opened it up just a little bit for me and the character of Andre, the great J. Harrison G., who I miss so very much. Yeah. We're playing husbands. And we're now part of what we refer to as the farce scene, which is the most pressure that's ever been put on me as an actor to be in rehearsal. And you're, okay, we're going to go work on the farce scene in the other room. You know, basically saying, okay, it's, you know, this scene is going to be hilarious because, you know, and working on rehearsing comedy is hard enough. Rehearsing farce is like, you know, so much more, you know. But anyway, we are part of that wonderful scene where the social worker comes to his apartment and he's going back and forth between himself and Doubtfire and the pie and the face and the whole, all the mixture.
It's so good.
My husband and I
just rewatched the movie because we were so sad to be missing the play. Yeah. And we were just watching it, and like every time something happened, we were like, "Of course it's a musical! Of course it's a musical!" And I want to see it.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
speaking of a musical, you know, a lot of the people, it's the same basic crew as was on Something Rotten. Yeah. I guess talk about creating two shows with that group, and then kind of having worked with Rob on the back half of Something Rotten and then starting something new with him.
Yeah. You know, the older I've gotten, the best thing about one of the things I love the most about what I get to do is when I get to work again and play with people that I, you know, love and respect and had a good time with, whatever, because, you know, at the end of the day, especially if you're doing it 8 times a week, you know, there's a lot more than just, you know, the talent on stage and what you're, you know, it's just about a lot of things. Right. Mm-hmm. And so yes, the room at Something Rotten was a very special place to be a part of that process and putting that show together and working with the Kirkpatricks and John O'Farrell and in that case, Casey and Nicolau. Mm-hmm. And then Rob came along and then Rob led the tour for a year, which is great because that tour went out with Rob McClure and Josh Grizzetti, mm-hmm. you know, which is A-list, you know, two guys to have to take that show around the country. And, you know, and now, you know, they released the rights for high school and amateur rights.
I love that show so much.
But I'm so excited because, you know, I'll never forget on opening night, you know, everybody loved us pretty much except one paper.
That's the best marketing I've ever seen.
You know, yeah, exactly. Right. But, since we're talking about me being Nostradamus, I said to Kevin O'Collum that night, I said, you know, I still think, God willing, we're going to have a great Broadway run. I said, but when this show is released to be done in community theater and high school and amateur rights like that, this show is going to make you guys a lot of money because it is such a joyous celebration of everything that is, you know, musical comedy in so many ways, while being also a really smart script and, you know, some hilarious roles. And I just, so I was thrilled to be a part of that and work with Rob really for the first time 8 times a week. We had done a reading or two, or as you do.
Yeah.
So yes, one of the greatest days of my life was last fall when this all fell into place for me, Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. I came along at the end. I was not a part of the Doubtfire process. I had not done any previous readings, workshops, or anything. The great Mario Cantone had been playing the role and opted not to continue, to my understanding, and I went in and auditioned and got the role. But yeah, anyway, one of a great day when I texted Rob and I said, well, hey, bro, he knew I was going in, you know, and I was like, hey, bro, because, you know, we're brothers in the show. And so, but yeah, so, you know, just the idea that I get to work with Rob again, has been, you know, very, very special. And the Kirkpatricks and, you know, on a whole different kind of project, whole different kind of character, mm-hmm. whole other thing. It's what I love the most is working again with people that I really need to admire.
The theme here is along came Brett Oscar in all these stories. but have you ever been to a place called Tuesdays in the Corner with Kevin?
It's Kevin's Corner. It's bad with the lag. It's very weird.
One day soon, we will be together.
Marinates and beautiful. Brad, welcome to Kevin's Corner.
And right, today, what happened? Okay, hi, Kevin.
So I have to be like,
in your corner.
I have a lot of very skillfully researched information here that I'm going to throw at you, and we'll see what happens.
Give
it
to me.
Today is a stage name showdown. So your name is Brad Oscar. So I'm going to give you two things. You have to pick him or him. So just whatever preference, I'll give you two things. You have to pick one or the other. And they're all men. So the first one is Brad Pitt or Oscar Wilde.
What's the criteria in here? What am I picking? Are we going to lunch?
you can pick and then explain your thought process for each one.
Well, then I guess Oscar Wilde. Sure, Oscar Wilde.
Why?
Because what a fascinating, you know, I mean, I love Brad Pitt. Sure, he's all well and good and fine, but Oscar Wilde holds a place in history as well that would be fascinating to perhaps meet Oscar Wilde or get to chat with him and,
perfect.
You know, hope that he was as big a queen as we hope he was. Let him, you know.
I'm with you on that.
Okay.
Next one. They might get harder, so just bear with me.
Jeez.
Bradley Cooper or Oscar De La Hoya?
Bradley Cooper.
Why?
You saw that Oscar's performance.
Because out of 99 people in the room, he would see you.
I'm still not sure why I'm choosing Bradley Cooper.
For each one.
Says.
Right. Here's a reason, because it's so much fun to yell your own name during sex.
Perfect. You might pick the, I know how you might pick all of these now.
Because, you know, it's hot too, so, you know, I'm sorry. My husband's in another room. My husband's in another room and, you know, all right.
He is beautiful, I agree.
God.
Brad Paisley, country singer.
Oh, right.
Or Oscar Hammerstein, the second.
Thank you for clarifying, Kevin.
Should I say Oscar Hammerstein? Because it's really fun to yell your own name during sex. You set him up, I'll knock him down. But yes, no, Oscar Hammerstein. My God, the genius, the forefather of whatever. Yes, sure.
Perfect.
Sorry, Oscar Hammerstein.
Next one is character actor Brad Garrett or Oscar Isaac.
Character actor Brad Garrett. Why can't he just be actor Brad Garrett? Oh, all right.
I'm just trying to be silly.
Or who? Character actor Brad Garrett or
Oscar Isaac.
What's his like qualifier? Like hunk Oscar Isaac?
Right. But he is sort of hunky. Yeah, right. Oscar Isaac.
X-Wing fighter pilot.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac again, you know, the name, sure. Yeah. Great.
Perfect. Brad Bird.
So many Brads.
The voice of The Incredibles and Ratatouille.
Right.
Or Oscar De La Renta.
Oh, I get it. Now I get the whole theme that's going through this. Oscar De La Renta, you got me on the go. Oscar De La Renta, Oscar De La Renta.
Yes, so you could sing that to him all the time.
Exactly. That would be fun. Right, I hope to look good doing it. Yes, and thin.
Bradley Whitford, or Oscar Happy Felsch, the Chicago White Sox player from 1915 to 1920, involved in the 1919 Black Sox scandal.
Ooh, now see, that's fascinating because I'm a huge baseball fan. So that would be really cool. And I actually just watched some of Eight Men Out last week, which is the John Sayles film, you know, based on that. So that fascinates me, but I love me some Brad Whitford. I actually knew Brad very casually when I first moved to the city. Mm-hmm. And he was doing A Few Good Men and I was doing Aspects of Love. We had a couple mutual friends involved, whatever. And so anyway, I've just always been a huge fan of Brad's and he's everywhere. God bless him. Yeah. And very handsome.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Yeah.
And then the last one is Brad Majors, the character from Rocky Horror, or Oscar the Grouch.
Oh, wow. You know, both which have been a part of my life because people have always said the Brad thing for Rocky Horror. And of course, especially growing up, Oscar, last name, Oscar the Grouch. So I guess I'll have to say Brad. Yeah. Brad, what is it? Brad? I don't even know Rocky. It's terrible. My husband worships Rocky Horror. He's done the show. I'm not a big Rocky Horror guy, but for my husband and because I know it's still Rocky Horror, I'll take Brad Majors.
And also, your big toe's name is Janet. So whenever you step, whenever you stub it.
Yell, damn it, Janet. Oh,
Brad.
That was a reach. I understand. Yeah,
that was all right. But no. This has been Kevin's Corner.
Kevin's Corner.
You had you'd mentioned you're a big baseball fan. Did you grew up in the DC area? Are you an Orioles fan or have you kind of turned into a Nationals fan?
Yes, exactly. Very good. Good on you. Good on you. Well, the interesting thing is I morphed into this crazy sports fan in my early 20s. I was not growing up, I was not interested in sports at all. I was a theater kid, anything to get out of gym. You know, blah, blah, blah. So, but my grandfather who lived with us was a huge sports fan. And my folks were Redskins fans as far as football goes. But anyway, I got turned on to baseball when I was doing Jekyll and Hyde in like 1997 by my friend Frank Mastrone, who was in Jekyll with me. And I was like, oh, baseball's so boring and da, da, da. He's like, no, you don't understand the mechanics of the game. And because I was sort of into football already at that time.
Sure.
But anyway, so I was a Mets. I am a diehard Mets fan. Diehard Mets fan because that's how I started. You know, I started with Mike Piazza, the whole thing.
Big Mets fan.
Oh. Well, you know.
I'm in my Mets.
There you go. Love it.
I'm a huge Mets fan.
Brian, I love it. Now, that said, by default, if the Mets go all the way, of course Mets. But if the Nationals do what they did, of course I love my hometown. And. Yeah. I'm thrilled they have a team, and it was great to see what they did this year because the Mets certainly weren't going all the way. I don't have all my stuff. My little David Wright is in my dressing room, literally locked downstairs at the Sondheim. When will I ever see him again?
That's so true. People's stuff is just locked away.
We literally left. They said you can – they did say you can come back in tomorrow to get stuff if you need stuff because at that point we were told 4 weeks. We knew it might be longer, but, you know, no one brought, like – you know, we didn't have to clean out our dressing rooms or anything. So, sure. Yeah, all that stuff is still just sitting there. Yeah, it's crazy. Eerie.
Talking about backstage and all that, we do a segment here called Stage Door Stories. Talk about some experience, whether it's heartfelt or hilarious or something that really stands out with your interaction with some people after shows.
You know, God bless my parents and my sister because I was one of those kids that had to go back to the stage door after every show we saw. Mm-hmm. So believe me, we know the stage door, every stage door at the Kennedy Center, at the National Theater, at Arena Stage, you know, and then of course we started coming to New York. And so it was always a big thing for me. I loved just getting autographs. Again, the idea that you could just get as close and as, you know, just have one last something for the evening, you know, if you will. Excuse me. So I am a firm believer. I like to go out through the stage door because it meant so much to me when actors did and when they would sign. And so, you know, I feel like, no, I don't feel like it's my responsibility. And there are times, of course, for whatever reason, I might not. But I do, in general, like to go out through the stage door because I think it's... I love that people, you know, get so excited and my God, especially with something like whether it was the producers or something rotten, you know, people were so passionate about those shows, you know, Jekyll and Hyde too. Mm-hmm. You know, we had all those fans, those Jackies we had, you know. So I can't say I'm like trying to think of like any specific story or whatever. I mean, But going along with exactly what I'm saying, I do remember specifically meeting this family from, I want to say, Arizona or New Mexico, a group of four, similar to the four of us that used to come up, my family, from D.C. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're big fans of yours. We have followed your career every time we're in town. If you're doing a show, we try to see it. We, you know, they knew who I, you know, in that way, in our little village of Anatevka, the people that love what we do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just, it touched me so, because here was this family that in many ways were exactly like my family was, in that way that we were passionate about it and that we enjoyed meeting and interacting with these people. And so, you know, usually, yeah. And I actually have become friends with a couple of people over the years because they have been fans perhaps at the start, but for whatever reason, the connection grew. I've actually made a couple lovely friendships over the years with people who have just, you know, met me at the stage door several times, and then you get to know them or whatever. So,
what a lovely like collection of stories about like budding friendships from the stage door that's called like Started at the Stage Door.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
Do you remember the first time you stage doored? Like the first time you went back to get an autograph as a kid?
Well, my parents, for whatever, one of the first shows I saw live, theatrical, when Stars used to take their shows out during the summer, there was a whole summer circuit. A lot of those theaters were in the round. We had one outside of D.C. called Shady Grove Music Fair. Westbury Music Fair was up here, actually, but we had Shady Grove. Anyway, I saw Angela Lansbury do MAME in the summer of 1972. Because she was literally taking it out for the summer, you know, a tour of MAME, right? I saw Ray Walston and Gwen Verdon do Damn Yankees in a very similar time, right? Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, my parents wrote a note. I was in love with Bedknobs and Broomsticks and her performance. The movie had obviously come out around the same time I'd seen it. She agreed to see us backstage. She could not have been lovelier. And for the next, 10 or so years, she received us backstage every time. We saw her in Gypsy twice. We saw her in Sweeney. We saw her in something else. I'm blanking. Anyway, she didn't necessarily remember who we were, but we would write the note and say that, and she would greet us like we were, oh, the Oscars. You know, so those, again, these memories that I had, and, you know, and she taught me. And then, God, I did a benefit for the York a couple years ago. She got the Oscar Hammerstein Award. Mm-hmm. She also came to see Something Rotten. And I practically, you know, had a breakdown on stage afterwards, seeing her, meeting her again, if you will, after all these years. And I didn't expect that she would obviously, you know, but I said, I can't tell you what I learned from you. Not just, you know, what you do, what you are as a performer, as an actor, but your graciousness and what that meant to me, what that taught me about, you know, that connection and what that is. It's gold. And she, yeah. So, yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot about the big things that you've done, but you do smaller pieces, and one of those being Broadway Bounty Hunter, that the album recently came out. I guess talk a little bit about the creative process with something a little bit bigger versus something a little bit smaller, and kind of the intimacy of a cast album one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, smaller is great because you're usually all in the same room at the same time, you know, for that process. I've done a couple of plays recently, which has been great. You know, to not have to worry about singing, but also just to be working with, you know, just five other actors or six other actors or whatever, just to, you know, form a company like that as opposed to 20 something. Right. So yeah, Bounty Hunter was a great time because Bounty Hunter was, again, a room full of people, all on the same page, you know, the great Joe Iconis, that sound that he created, this vibe that these, you know, all the boys wrote, as far as that goes, and our director, Jen Werner, everybody, again, you know, you talk about, you have to, you know, everybody has to be creatively on the same page, ideally, and more important in a musical, maybe, because there were so many elements. But, you know, working at home and premiering, you know, a new piece of American musical theater, that I think, you know, again, you have to drink the Kool-Aid, but I'm trying to be as objective as I can be. I think it was a really good time and a really worthy show in so many ways. And so that's why I'm so grateful that we were able to record, because that's how the shows live on. That's why people wait at the stage door and say, oh my God, Big Fish,
big fish because most of them didn't see the show, but right. they have heard the album and they have done the show because the show is being done because we recorded. Mm-hmm. So I pray that Bounty Hunter will now be recognized in that way. People will be like, wow, this is a really cool score. Because, you know, American musical theater needs to, you know, keep moving forward in a way. And I think that Joe Iconis, you know, is carrying that torch. There are obviously many who are. But I was thrilled to be a part of it because I've known Joe casually for years. And I really, you know, I like him a lot. And it was fun to do something that was so outrageous and different for me.
For sure. Cool. Yeah.
It was fun. Kevin and I saw it.
Yeah, you were super great.
And I'm realizing now that... Wasn't that the first show at Barrow Street after Sweeney?
I don't know if there was. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think.
When I walked back into that space, I had to, you know, do a quick double tap. I was like, what? Because, you know, they built that pie shop.
We were like, oh, it was a theater?
Exactly.
Yeah, we were so confused.
That's so cool. Oy.
Well, let's play another game here to close everything out.
Sure. Funny that we start with talking that because I have... A game called The Broadway Internet Hunter.
Oh. Ooh.
Another fun game that we can play while we are in separate spaces. So we're all at our computers or on our phones. Mm-hmm. For ease, I will suggest that we all just go to IBDB, if you're familiar.
Okay. Familiar?
And how this game will work is it's basically a Broadway trivia hunt. So I have a few trivia questions that you can find on IBDB. The last person to get the right answer, again, it's just a test of your internet speeds. But the last person to get the right answer can ask the next trivia question or quandary. Something you've always wondered.
So if somebody gets it right and they yell out the answer, doesn't somebody else just repeat what they said?
Yeah, but then they would be last.
Right, and then the other person's last.
Yeah,
it's basically like that game Spoons, where like if you find the answer, you grab the spoon, and we all reach for the spoon by yelling the answer.
Okay.
Got we it. All reach for a virtual.
I've never heard of Spoons.
You've never heard of Spoons?
No.
What?
Is that the Midwest thing?
That's not real.
I don't know. I played it in New Jersey.
You're making things up.
Yeah.
Spoons!
I'll teach you when the world stops ending.
I know. When we can all play the same spoon, we'll play the game.
I'm fascinated. What are you asking us? Like what? Like what? What's this?
So I'll start with the first couple, and then if we want to branch out into other people asking questions, we can.
Cool.
Okay.
So the first thing I'd like you all to find is who is the original 80 Annie in Oklahoma? The original.
Celeste Holm.
Well, yes. Or you just might know the answer.
Celeste Holm.
Exactly.
Damn. How did I?
I don't need your IBDB.
And then something a little more specific.
Okay.
How many shows has Audra McDonald been in on Broadway? How many Broadway shows for
Audra? Broadway shows. Okay, 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 okay.
Counting her relations. What am I doing?
A little different.
12.
12.
According to.
12.
Sorry, Kev.
So Kevin got the last one. I'll ask one follow-up. What was her debut?
Secret Garden.
Kevin, what is a question you think might stump us?
Okay.
Or does he have to really look?
All right, I got you. Who is the original Rizzo in Greece?
Oh.
The rat from Muppets.
No. I don't think that's correct.
Now I want the Muppets to do Grease so bad.
Got it.
I just found it too.
Adrian Barbeau.
Yes.
Say it.
Adrian Barbeau.
It is?
Yeah.
Wow.
Walter Bobby was Roger?
Yeah, Walter Bobby was, yeah.
How fun.
And Jerry Zaks was a replacement.
Oh,
earlier.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How about that?
Huh.
And Brad Majors. Was
Danny Zuko.
Yes.
There he is.
Exactly, Barry.
I like the setting. Setting in and around Rydell High.
Yeah.
In and around.
Yeah, the park is close. Yeah, the Burger Palace is pretty close.
Does anyone else have a fun question?
Who was a swing with me on Aspects of Love who later went on to cover and go on for the lead role in Victor Victoria on Broadway?
Oh, what a search. We'll go on. Okay, let's find it.
All right.
Aspects of Love.
Who was a swing, original swing on Aspects of Love who would later go on to play the role of Victor Victoria?
That is going to be Anne-Marie Ranulfsson.
Ranulfsson.
Exactly. Ranulfsson.
No, Anne-Marie Ranulfsson.
You should know Anne-Marie Renault. Yes, anyway, yeah, there you go.
Fun. Okay, Kevin, you can ask us a last question.
Okay, the last question is, who played Gypsy Rose Lee in the Gypsy production with Tyne Daly?
Krista Moore.
Yeah, I feel like I know that.
That was Krista Moore.
Krista Moore, got it.
Did you just know that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. Because Krista Moore was, you know, Krista Moore originated a couple roles around Big and a couple other shows. Yeah. And but that production was fantastic, that Gypsy. Yes.
I did a show with her in South Florida, and it was, like, my second professional gig. And I was, like, doing, like, a sidekick character, like a Waka Waka kind of guy.
Fozzie Bear?
Well, the show was Enter Laughing. And I was doing like the Marvin character, the like best friend who's like adult kind of character. And she was in it. And my parents, this was like my second professional show. And my parents were doing that whole thing where they like research every single person who's in the show with me and tells me who they are and things like that. And so they found her. So they started calling her two-time Tony because she'd been nominated for a Tony twice.
She's also a two-time Tony loser.
Yeah. So they
the great Krista Moore. Yeah.
So they might still call her two-time Tony if they ever bring up when I did shows. two-time Tony. And I'm like, her name is Krista Moore.
Well, thank you, Brad, so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, you guys. This is
fun. We end every episode with a quote. So some of those make you happy, some make you sad, some are quite big, some quite small, some are too long, some just plays with song, some musicals have no talking at all. A musical. Thank you so much. We truly cannot wait to see Doubtfire, so we will definitely be in those seats the second that we are allowed to be in those seats.
We'll all meet back on Broadway, God willing. Yes.
And again, you can follow us at Broadwasted. You can find us on all social media platforms. You can join our Facebook group. You can also find us on Patreon. We have some awesome content, especially nowadays. We have some awesome content. We're doing new movies every Friday, fun stuff like that. You can find us on Spotify and, of course, iTunes. Rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
Thank you.
You can also hear Brad on the Broadway Bounty Hunter album, amongst other albums. But after the outro of this episode, we're going to play one of the songs from that album. So check that out. You can find that wherever music can be checked out. And maybe not, don't go to the library, but digitally. again, thank you so much for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. As you can tell, we're all huge admirers of your work. So we were happy to talk through a little portion of your incredibly impressive resume. So thank you so much.
Thank you guys. Much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. As we always, we raise a glass and we say, Zudua bum. That in and around Rydell.
Find you're the idol of all your peers. Your friends ain't friends anymore, they're just souvenirs. And since you're on the top of the mountain, they see the money you're counting, and they try to bring you down. New York's that kind of town. So then you hide in the jungle for a little while. You run a nasty ass brothel, you're versatile. Sipping on tequila and lime, really you're just biding your time. And when you're ready then, you try try New York again. But sometimes your wife becomes a bounty hunter and screws up your plan. But since you're worldly wise, you just improvise, and then you're back on track, and then you're winning man. And you're riding your motorcycle through the jungle, and the wind's whipping through your magnificent chest hair, and you're screaming at the top of your lungs. I'm back, bitch, I'm back, bitch, I'm back. Listen to me, I'm back, bitch, I'm back, bitch, I'm back. This I decree, I'm old, white, and rich, bitch, I'm back. And I'm ready to play. And I confess, I guess I never really ever went away. But first, we gotta celebrate our opening night. I can't wait to see those kids on my glorious drug. What it does to them. I'm talking about stamina, vocal range, turning little theater queens into powerhouse machines. I'm talking about stamina,
stamina,
vocal range,
vocal
work
range.
Apart until they die. There's always others standing by. I'll target all up and comers.
So shiny
you. I'll hit the college kid circuit.
Yo, NYU.
Then I'll gather each little drone, put him in a show of my own. This'll all pay off in spades when I'm tripping in accolades. And in the Tony Award press room, when they say to me, who are you? Where did you come from? I'm gonna look them all right in the eyes and yell. I'm talking about stamina. I'm talking about vocal range.
Yeah.
I'm talking about riff until you drop, a feeling that's never gonna stop. I'm talking about stamina,
stamina,
vocal range,
vocal,
turning little theater queens into powerhouse machines. I'm talking about stamina.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.